Ladies and gentlemen, you're very welcome to Off the Ball Live from the Alex Hotel in Dublin. We're here in association with Virgin Media in the company of some Liverpool Premier League and Ireland legends. On stage tonight, we've Graeme Souness, Brian Kerr, Damien Delaney and Keith Andrews. But first, give it up for the man who has Mayo blood but a Liverpool heart. It's Nathan Murphy!
I don't know what he's talking about. I am completely unbiased when it comes to football, as you will see over the next couple of hours. How are we doing, Dublin? Good, good. Thank you very much for coming out this Monday night to the Alex Hotel. We've got a cracking show lined up for you. We are here with thanks to Virgin Media, who, as you know, have over 400 UEFA Champions League, Europa League and Nations League games live this season. All of these games are available to all Virgin Media TV customers, who can also download the TV Anywhere app and stream the action whenever and wherever they like. So who have we got in our audience? Have we any Manchester United supporters? Yeah. Ooh. It's going to be a long night for you guys, I fear. We will talk about, I don't know, will we get to the Europa League? We might get to the Europa League. I'm not sure. We're definitely going to be talking a lot about the Champions League. We've got a brilliant lineup to come over the next couple of hours. We're joined by a true Liverpool legend. Graeme Souness is going to be with us. We have the godfather of Irish football, Brian Kerr. We have a man who played a pivotal role in Liverpool's recent history. Who will ever forget? Liverpool are 3-0 up against Crystal Palace. Just maybe goal difference will work in their favour. And then Damien Delaney pops up from 25 yards with the most wickedly deflected goal you've ever seen. And things go to crap. Damien Delaney is going to be here to explain himself over the next little while. And Keith Andrews is going to give us a world exclusive. He's going to tell us exactly what his role is going to be in the next Irish managerial setup. No, sorry. He said he's definitely going to walk off stage if we ask him anything about his role in the next Irish managerial setup. So do not text that in, because we do want your texts, we do want your questions, because we've got a great competition as well. We're giving you the chance to win a football signed by our guests. You'll get a set of JBL 120 wireless earbuds and a pair of tickets to see either the film Zidane or Street Leagues at the Virgin Media Dublin International Film Festival. To be in with a chance of winning, you can just text in your questions for Graeme, Brian, Damien or Keith. Just use the hashtag OTBTheAlex, or probably as well to tweet them in rather than text them in, and the two best questions will win. If you don't have a question, you can tweet in a selfie, whatever you want, and we'll put you in and we'll get any questions, any decent questions, to the lads over the next couple of hours. Everyone ready to go? Yeah! All right, let's get our first guest on stage. He is a proper Liverpool legend. 5 league titles, 4 league cups, 3 European cups, one of Liverpool's greatest ever players. Give it up for Graeme Souness!
Thank you.
It's a nice reception of a Monday evening, isn't it?
Yeah. Good start. See if it continues.
The Manchester United supporters, they were just... They
weren't as eager. To admit to being a Man United supporter.
Tonight. Of all nights.
Mm. Where is he? There's two of you. Or three. Brave boys.
I was rhyming off the role of honour there and all the incredible things you achieved at Liverpool. Are you someone who has, if you walked into Graeme Souness' house, the medals are front and centre?
It's funny you should say that. I was talking about that today. I went to a funeral back in Liverpool and Manchester today, and a good friend of mine, Francis Lee, picked me up from the hotel I was staying at, went to the funeral, went back to his house, and I walked into his house and said, "You can't really tell you've been a player." And I said, "That's the exact same in my house. If you walked into my house, you would never know I played football." And it's just something I was never... That's been the same with, I think, all the houses I've got. You know... Did
Why?
I enjoy it? I don't know. I don't feel...
So where are they?
Medals are in a safe. Pictures...
Where's the safe?
That's in the house. I'm not telling you where that is. And, you know, I've given a lot of stuff away. You know, I don't think I've any more shirts left. Caps I give away on a regular basis now for charity things. But unlike England, we got a cap every year as opposed to every game.
Right.
So being Scottish, keeping up with the things that
a little bit tight.
Expected of us. So yeah, you wouldn't know it was my house if you
right. Because the example, if you talk about medals, we'd often give in Ireland is about Potter Carrington, who you walk into his house and he has on the kitchen table the two claret jugs.
Yeah.
And then on the dinner table, the Watermaker trophy. Mm. And his reasoning is that, well, if people are coming to my house who doesn't know, like, they want to see
well,
it.
I don't invite anyone to my house, that's the reason.
Okay.
Miserable bastard. Can we swear?
You can do whatever the hell you want tonight. You're amongst friends. Right. Turn off your phones. Yeah. You, down the back. Put it down. So we're going to be talking a lot about the Champions League, and we're going to talk about the best Champions League team of the last 10 years. We're going to get into Liverpool Atletico Madrid tomorrow night over the next little while, and with the rest of our guests. Your history with the European Cup and as a three-time European Cup winner. When you came into Liverpool in 78, was it January 78? You arrived
January
at Liverpool.
January 78. They were already champions.
They were already European champions. How much of a factor was that in you going to Liverpool?
No, none. I mean, they were dominant anyway. And at that time, you know, if you could have gone to anywhere else, I mean anywhere else, whether it was Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, you would have chosen Liverpool. Liverpool was the team to be at. They were dominant. Household names. I mean, Liverpool is, and you expect me to say this, but I'm willing to accept that it might be a close second, but the place to play football, you know, the job I do now, I work with people who recently finished playing. And when I'm doing a game at Anfield, I said, did you enjoy playing here? He said, well, most of them would answer yes and no. Yeah, great atmosphere, but you got nothing here. Because you didn't get much, you know, when you were leaving. Liverpool right now is a very, very special place. I go, you know, I obviously work Virgin Media. I think we do a really good job on the Champions League nights. And there was a game last year with Barcelona. And I said to the guys, I don't think I ever experienced anything quite like that because the atmosphere was jumping out the television. That night at Anfield, the atmosphere was just incredible. Now, whether it's because in my time there, they were used to winning it, they were used to winning leagues, but right now at Liverpool, the atmosphere is quite unique. It really is.
How much of that is just down to the manager?
No, it's down to the football players. It's down to the players that are creating an atmosphere that where, you know, the supporters are turning up knowing the guys that are watching are giving 100%, and there's some fabulous football players individually, but collectively they're unstoppable.
You arrived then, Bob Paisley's the manager. Jack Charlton was manager of Middlesbrough when you were leaving?
No, he had left.
He had left already?
He had left Jack. He was a big part of my history. You know, he sorted me out, basically, tough love one way or the other. And I responded to his type of management. He left, and then John, that's terrible, isn't it? The manager that sold me, couldn't wait to get rid of me. I went in the January, and it was a record transfer fee between two English clubs for a defensive midfield player. That was quite unique. And then I ended up having the most, I think, what was it, seven seasons in Liverpool. It was just a unique time. And walking into a dressing room where you had serial winners, you know, there's a saying in football, you look to your left, you know, in the dressing room, do you trust him? And do you look to your right? Do you trust him? Well, you know, you could have just swept right across the dressing. You trusted everybody in there because they'd been through the mill and come out the other end winning trophies.
And what were you like when you walked into that dressing room mirror? What, 23, 24 at that stage? Were you
I was 24,
a confident figure?
My story is, I don't know where I get my confidence from other than, you know, I always had an incredible belief in my own ability. I was the youngest of three sons, so I always had older brothers, and I came from a great family, you know, a great mum and dad. I was really lucky in that respect. And I don't know, is that why I ended up being not shy, let's put it that way. I was ready for every challenge, and I felt, you know, walking into that dressing room, didn't feel intimidated at all.
I felt I belonged. Obviously, it was a time when a lot of Scottish players arrived, so Kenny Dalglish had come, Alan Hansen. I don't know if Hansen hadn't even made a Scotland debut at that stage.
Yeah, he was
were you aware of him?
He was a wee bit younger.
Were you aware of Hansen and how good he was?
No. I mean, quickly, within a week.
Right.
You know, Alan Hansen was a midfield player in disguise.
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't get the ball off him in a telephone box. He had that. His technique was incredible. And, you know, for me as a midfield player, when I sometimes got man-marked, you know, he was a delight to play with because he would just skip past the centre-forward, aim for me, And I'd take a couple of steps to the side. The guy that was with me would have to go to him. And all of a sudden, I'm on the ball. I mean, he was special. Can you imagine him and Van Dijk today? Oh, good luck with that one if you're a forward. You'd be chasing shadows all afternoon.
And that sort of telepathy that you had, and then you sent it up to Kenny Dalglish. Was that something that was to repetition on the training ground again and again and again? No. Or was it just came naturally to good players?
It worked. Immediately. I don't buy that. I know I'm contradicting myself because on Sunday I said, the boy Pepe at Arsenal's got a chance of being a great player, like the best ever player, Thierry Henry, who took a year to settle in for whatever reason. And for me, Thierry was arguably the best player in the world for two or three years at Arsenal. But I don't buy into that, players need time. I went to Italy when I left Liverpool. First year, at the end of the season, had a charity game. They picked the top 11 foreigners. We played Verona, who unbelievably had won the league that year. There was a guy called Preben Elkjær. I don't know if the guys remember him, a Danish player, and had a really good team. And then we meet 2 hours before the game. We shake hands. We get stripped, go out to play, and we beat them 6-0. So a team that's all just shook hands with beat the league champion 6-0. And, you quickly work out what people have got and what they haven't got. And I think, with Kenny, that's part of being a top player, that you can read what other players are doing.
And did you always feel that at Liverpool, that when players would be signed, when they'd arrive in, you'd be able to tell within a week or two whether they'd make it?
No. I think, where Liverpool are now is where they were when I went as a player, and where Man United were for a long time as well, where they could buy players that didn't have to go straight into the team. If you think of Fabinho and you think of Andy Robertson on the sidelines, having a look, learning what it's all about, and then slowly introduced, where Man United right now are in a horrible place. They're having to buy everyone. They're under pressure. Everyone that they buy has to go straight in and be an influence right away. And that's you don't want to be there. The spotlight's on this. Is it Fernandez that we just bought? It puts him under enormous pressure. Has to go in and be the difference, to take them from where they are to where they want to be. And Liverpool right now are in a great place. With the age group they've got, there's only maybe James Milner that you would say has got maybe a year left in him. The rest of them have got lots of life left in them.
And did you not feel any of that pressure when you came to the club? This is a team who, as you say, were dominating English football, who were the European champions. Was there not a part of you thinking, am I going to be ready for this?
I know it sounds terribly arrogant, but my attitude was I should have been here years ago. And people can call it big-headed, but arrogant, but that's how I felt.
When you go through the managers you played under, so starting as a youngster at Spurs and been around Bill Nicholson and then going to Jack Charlton, you have a time at Jock Stein at Scotland, there's a short period with Alex Ferguson, and then obviously with Bob Paisley and Joe Fagan as well. Like it's a list of managers few players have ever had the privilege of playing under. The first two in particular, Nicholson and Charlton, how important were they in those formative years?
Well, I went to Spurs when I was 15, and sort of 16, 17, did okay. By the time I was 18, we'd won the FA Youth Cup, which is a big deal when you're a young player. From 18 onwards, when the team used to go up, as it did in those days, in the home team dressing room, my name wasn't on it. I'd be straight down to the manager's office. Why am I not on the squad? I'm better than... in those days, the current England captain, Alan Mullery, a World Cup winner, Martin Peters, and Steve Perriman had gotten the team before me. And I said, but I'm better than all of them. You should be, why are you not playing me? And in the end, at 19, he sold me as far as he could from London to Middlesbrough. But I like to think I'd arguably be one of Bill's biggest mistakes.
Because I was going to ask, when you look back now in hindsight and having been a manager and probably haven't had to deal with young, confident players, could you see why he sold you?
I would want that. Right. No, I would want that from young men. I believe, who's the really young player, wears his hair in a bun, if players would say.
Harvey Elliott.
It seems like he's knocking on the manager's door. Now I should be in the team. I'd want that. I'd love that from young players.
And why do you think Nicholson didn't? Just didn't like his authority?
Looking back, I can understand. Obviously, I'm 18. He's got a couple of England players, and Steve Perriman was a different type of player to me. And he was a man early. His game was based on being really aggressive, and he was a destroyer. So I think he felt he was more of that than I was.
And did you not have that side of your game when you were that age?
It's strange. If you spoke to any of sort of my contemporaries when I was a young player at Spurs, I became a very different player to that, to the one I ended up being. I mean, I left Spurs when I was 19, and I think at 21 I became this size, and then sort of realised I was sort of
able to put it about a bit.
Quite strong. No, I was always aggressive as a young boy, but I sort of obviously matured quite late.
In terms of going back to European Cup, Champions League, and the difference between the competition now, and it very much feels as though it's the premier competition in world football, probably even above a World Cup in standard of football. Comparing it to when you first played then in 78, and because Liverpool were champions in 77, they got a bye, and then they played Dresden, Benfica, Mönchengladbach, and you're in a final. But it was knockout. Was it more difficult then?
Well, you can't grow into it like you can now. You've got to be on your mettle in every game you're playing. I can remember Liverpool's a unique football club that I'd been signed for a record transfer fee. I couldn't play against Benfica because I hadn't signed in time for that round. We played Benfica, I think, at home first, and then we went in there. It may have been another way around, but it's not relevant to the story. So we're at Benfica, torrential downpour. Pitch is completely muddy. I'm there in my latest suit thinking I look really smart after the game. We've had a good result, and all the muddy gear spread across the dressing room floor. And I'm standing there. I've only been there a matter of weeks. And Ronnie Moran said, "What the wrong with you?" I said, "What do you mean? I'm fine, Ronnie. Thanks very much. I'm good. Are you a team player or what?" I said, what do you want me to do? I can pick up the muddy boots and all. The boys have been playing football. They've worked hard. We had a good result. So here's me in my latest whatever it was, thinking I look smart. Covered in shit at the end of it, picking up muddy boots and dirty shirts and putting them in a skip and having to tie the boots together as they made you do then. And that was an early wake-up call of the Liverpool way.
Yeah.
You know, don't be thinking, you know, Paul Pogba would be doing that, of course, right now. Yeah.
So it would be that Liverpool way, that boot room ethic. It would have been that vocal of...
Oh, they were in your face. I mean, I went to Ronnie's funeral... What was it, 4 years ago? And I had my youngest son, James, who would have been about 16 at the time. And we were driving back, and I said, you know, thinking about it, he was the single biggest influence on my career, Ronnie Moran. Because we had Joe Fagan, who was like everyone's favourite uncle, granddad, you know, superhuman being. And Ronnie was the original Mr. Growler. He really was. And he got after you every single day, and he made you feel... It made you feel as if, yeah, you're a good player, but you're not like the players we've had here in the past. Or you're a good team, but we've had some better teams than your lot. And, you know, pre-season would start, we'd have a week at home at Melwood. And then towards the end of the first week, he'd come in with a box, like something we'd delivered to Anfield in this box, and just a cardboard box. And he'd walk into the dressing room at the end of the Anfield, the end of the second training session. And he'd put the box on the table and he would say, if you played enough games and you think you deserve one, there's a medal in there for you, you know, for winning the league. And then he'd walk out and we'd go, 1 second, 2, 3, 5, 6 seconds it normally was, and his head would pop round and he would say, and by the effing way, we get nothing this year for what's in that box. So before we even kicked a ball, he's reminded us that last year counts for nothing. That's first week of pre-season. And he was after us, and it didn't matter. You know, Kenny and I became sort of the big players there. Mm. And he would give it to us on a regular basis, like he would the new kid coming in the door. He was such an influence. He was so good at his job.
And did it always affect you? Because at that stage, you're at the peak of your powers. You're one of, if not the best, central midfielders in Europe. When someone's telling you and, you know, questioning what you've done last season, you don't just shrug it off and... say, no, I know exactly how good I am.
No, because it was for everybody, but it was more for the sort of the younger ones, the ones who weren't as experienced. Yeah, we listened to them, of course. I mean, it was an argument you couldn't win with Ronnie.
And was Paisley all over that? Was he very much aware of the good cop, bad cop that was maybe going on with Fagan and Ronnie Moran?
Bob, the boss never said very much. You know, he was ruthless. You know, I later became manager, and there was a window that he used to stand at especially if it was cold, we wouldn't see too much of him out in the training ground. And there was a cabinet here with a phone on it. And we'd be jogging past on a cold wintry morning, and we'd all be saying, look at that bastard in there. He's on the phone to his bookmaker. This is live, is it? There's a radiator.
It's not live, is it? We can edit all this, it's fine.
And there's a radiator underneath the window, and we'd be going, look, he's on the phone to his bookmaker, and he's got his bollocks on a radiator. So you can't edit that, can you? So later when I went back as manager, Tom Saunders, who's a right-hand man to all the managers from Shankly to Paisley to Joe, Kenny, and to me, I said, his nickname was Dougie. I said, when Dougie was standing here, looking out, and we maybe just won the European Cup, I said, was he ever happy? He said, no. The pre-season, we're jogging past, and he said, he's about done. He's got maybe a season left in him. We've got to keep an eye on him, because I'm not sure if he'll make the season. So even after winning the biggest trophy, he was already thinking. And I think it goes back to, I think I'm correct in saying this, under Shankly in the 60s, they lost an FA Cup tie at Watford. And afterwards, Shankly said, never again are we going to allow this to happen. And what had happened, that was his first team. And he had stuck with them too long, because they were his boys. And you have to keep evolving, don't you? And sometimes you have to say goodbye to players that you maybe have spent 10 years with. And he said, never again will we get so close to them and allow that to happen.
That generation, when we talk to players who played in sort of 70s and 80s, and there's a sense that while it was clearly a time of professional footballers, that maybe the level of professionalism wasn't where it is quite now. In that you could enjoy yourselves a little bit more at times. That you could enjoy yourselves. Would you balk at that suggestion that, so saying those away trips, if you're going to Benfica or you're going to Eastern Europe, was it very much...
Well, my argument to that is, when I went to Newcastle, I worked with Kieran Dyer and Bellamy, and they were great guys. but they drove me mad. And I can remember having a discussion with them. I said, okay, because they were saying, when you played, it wasn't as physical, it was easier. And, you maybe didn't live correctly and not like us today. I said, well, can you explain this to me? I said, when we were playing against the Italian teams, the Spanish teams, the French teams, the German teams, who are all living like you are now. But we used to piss all over them. How was that possible? And they'd go and walk off, pull a face and walk off. And, we knew how to enjoy ourselves. We restricted it to two nights a week. But we would still play the teams that were meant to be, living correctly, and we were far better than them. And the longer the game went, the stronger we got and the weaker they got. Well, how can you explain it to me? Because you asked a bloody question.
So you were able to manage it?
Yeah, and some, yeah.
What's your memory of that first European Cup final then? At Wembley, pretty much a home tie.
It wasn't a great game because we were the champions. And, looking back, there was never a doubt we were going to win it. Bruges had got there, obviously a very good team, but they were scared of us. And they didn't make a game up, but they were trying to catch us on the break. You're playing at Wembley, 100,000 people in those days. It must have been 95,000 Scousers there or Liverpool supporters. And it wasn't a great game. None of the three I played in were great games. And I think we won quite easily, although it was just 1-0.
Did you get nervous around games? Would you sleep fine the night before?
No. It was a slight upside to it. I mean, about a couple of months before we played, I think it was Leeds at home, and we'd gone into as the way it was then, game finished 4:45. By 5:45, you're in the players' lounge having a beer. And there was a very attractive young lady in there, and so I'm being shy. I went over and introduced myself, and it turned out she was Miss World. So the reason she was in our see, they're laughing and saying, how did he pull Miss World? So her chaperone was a Scouser, and she was a Liverpool supporter, so brought her to the game. Anyway, so we play this horrible game of football, we win 1-0. Kenny gets the goal, and then we're going to the celebration afterwards, and I'm walking in with this very attractive young lady. So there was a, you know, 24 ain't bad. I'm thinking, how much better does it get than this?
It's the George Best line, where did it all go wrong?
No. So that was the first one. And then the second one, it was against Real Madrid in Paris. And again, what I remember about that, and I've since watched it on television, again, they didn't want to give us a game of football.
They tried to kick lumps out of you.
Yeah, for the older people in the dressing room. Spanish football used to be ridiculously cynical. It wasn't like it is today where, you know, it's all neat and cute passing and entertaining. I mean, they would have generally lots of South Americans, and they're really, really cynical. And we had players that could look after themselves. So we were playing the game, and they were getting stuck into us. And if you watch the first, certainly 20 minutes, half an hour of that game, it was forgetting the ball. It was just, you know, trying to empty each other. And then it settled down, and we bossed it, I think. And then Alan Kennedy gets the goal. And then we're in the dressing room afterwards, and Phil Neal and I get pulled out as for the drug test. So, and this is how football's changed. So if you can imagine how the pampered pooches are today compared to this. So we are taken off to some ante room, and of course summer's night, you can't pee. And eventually we do, and when we do, we come out to a stadium that's closed down. No lights on, everywhere's in darkness. There's no official with us. You can just about remember the name of the hotel we're in. So what are we going to do? We'll get a taxi. You got any money? No, I've not got any money. Have you? No, I've got no money. We'll get a taxi. So we'll go outside. No taxi would stop for us. So we're walking for about an hour. Just won a European Cup.
In Paris?
It's in Paris. I don't know if we're walking, if the hotel's that way or that way. But we're just walking. We're walking to where most of the traffic was coming from. So we're thinking, better chance of getting a taxi. So eventually I said, well, I'm not walking anymore. We've not been missed one bit. By this time, they're all half pissed. They're all, sitting, having a nice meal, and we're walking the streets of somewhere in Paris suburb. So I said, well, stop a police car. So I jump out, this blue light flashing, screeches this van, the door's open, two guys jump out with their sticks in their hand. And I goes, whoa, and I'm pulling inside my jacket. I've got my medal, I'm going like this, and I'm pointing back to the stadium. Football, me, football player. And I go, so we're thrown in the back of the van with the blue light flashing. We end up back at the hotel. Now, can you imagine a player today doing that? I don't think so.
And you're just thinking 3 years earlier, you're leaving with Miss World. Yeah. And now you're walking the streets with Phil Neal going, where did it all go wrong?
But there was an upside to it. So that was easy for me to remember. That was the 27th of May, 1981. So obviously you get pissed afterwards. And then you wake up the following morning and you're still pissed, if you do happen to go to bed. And then you go back to Liverpool and you go around the city on open deck bus. And that's great. And then on the Friday, the 29th, my first son was born. So
wow.
That was, three
not a bad
very,
week.
Very special days.
Yeah. 84, we have the footage from the penalty shootout.
The goal will look minute to him, enormous to Tancredi.
Yes!
And Souness has done it too. So maybe the balance swings a fraction Liverpool's way now, because the pressure is more and more on Roma.
Okay.
There's our friend Bruce Grobbelaar again. Now, will it be 3-3? Missed it! So Liverpool 3-2 up. Now, forward. Is it Kennedy coming forward? It's Kennedy. If he scores, it's all over. And Liverpool have won. Liverpool are European champions! What joy! Alan Kennedy's penalty goal leaves Rome distraught and Merseyside jubilant. Alan Kennedy's penalty gives Liverpool the European Cup for the fourth time. Well, the Liverpool flags are flying. A brilliant moment. And again we say, when finally he can raise that magnificent cup aloft, it's well done, Liverpool. And a man who really dominated the middle of the field tonight, Graham Souness, and Lawrenson and Hansen at the back. And as you were saying, the working of Ian Rush up front, a really marvellous team performance.
Not bad, eh? Have you got a sort of memory that minute by minute you can think back to that night and go...
Yeah, I can remember when Belly Boy, we called him, Alan Kennedy, scored the goal. I went, and then I immediately...
Why'd you call him that?
I turned... there's a journalist in Liverpool, Bell Mooney.
Okay.
I don't know if she's an agony aunt or something. I don't know quite the connection, but that's with Belly Boy.
Okay.
A fucking great guy. I mean, he used to take the brunt of a lot of the stick.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. But I was just talking about celebrating. I went straight to the manager. I had a great relationship with both Bobbies, the and Joe Fagan. But I went straight to him. He's a special human being, Joe Fagan.
Were you always very close during your time at Liverpool?
Yeah. You know, he was only a manager for, just the 1 year when I was there. A special man. And I'll try not to get emotional, but my mum, no, I can't go there. Too much. But that was a great time. I mean, I can remember, so we had been to Israel for a week's holiday, and it had been a proper boy's holiday. When it's a boy's holiday, everything you shouldn't do if you're preparing for a European Cup final.
It's not live, but I still, there's a lot of people.
Yeah, I got an idea. So then we come back, we train a couple of days at Melwood, and then we go off to Italy on the Tuesday. We train in our stadium on the Tuesday night, and then we wake up on the Wednesday. No, we don't wake up on the Wednesday. We go to bed on the Tuesday night, and I room with Kenny Dalglish, and Kenny would take a sleeping pill. And I never ever did, but he'd take a sleeping pill. I don't know if anyone's taken one of these pills, whatever he was taking. For 10 minutes, he talked absolute bollocks.
Are you sure they were sleeping pills?
Yeah, it was like... And I had 10 minutes every Friday night going... I've got the telly on going, yep, and I knew that it would be black and white. It'd be a yep, and then all of a sudden I wouldn't hear from him. So this, we're playing a European Cup final on the following day. So Tuesday night, he takes his pill, and it coincides with the telly going up next door, blaring. So I say, can you hear that? So I'm banging on the wall, nothing. Phone down to reception and say, look, someone's at it. Someone's, they've got the television blaring. Don't worry, sir, we'll fix it. Now, it's not like today when there's 100 channels on your television set. This is Rai Uno, Rai Due, and another Italian channel. So there's absolutely nothing to watch, so I can't sleep. I'm up. I'm knocking on the door. Nothing. So eventually, I get to sleep. So we wake up in the morning, and Kim and I are going down for breakfast. And as we're coming to our room, the person's coming out of the room where the noise had been. That was our fucking manager. I said, boss, what happened? Last year you kept us awake. The telly was too low. We opened the second bottle of scotch last night. We had to finish it. Sorry if we kept you awake. it was brilliant. I mean, I could tell you 100 stories about how simple they made it. So we never ever had team meetings. And then we went to the training ground that morning. No one had bothered to check it. It was a ploughed field, so I spent an hour in the bus going there in the traffic in Rome, an hour coming back having not been able to train because the pitch was so uneven, we would have twisted an ankle. So we're having lunch, and just as we're finishing lunch, Joe got his spoon and tapped a glass and said, excuse me, boys, can you leave us to the waiters? So we're all nudging ourselves, saying, what's he going to say? Because we never ever spoke about the opposition. It was all about what you're going to do. And it made you feel 10 foot tall. So he stood up, and it was plain from his first sentence. He was talking to himself. He was looking at the ceiling, and he was going, and this is it. This is the extended version. Big game tonight. They must have good players to be in the final of the European Cup. won the league last year, so then you're stating the bloody obvious. And he said, now, the bus leaves at 5:30, make sure no one's late. But that was our team meeting for a European Cup final. And trust me, you think I'm making that up or I'm not telling the whole story. That was exactly what it was. And then we get to the stadium. Alan Hansen is the greatest storyteller that I've come across in football. He's telling stories I've all heard 100 times before, but he tweaks them. So we're all giggling and laughing. This is half an hour before the game starts. Still not mentioned opposition. And Joe says, by the way, kick off in half an hour. Drop off, sorry. And we go out and get into the tunnel. Someone starts singing the Bruce Rea song. I don't know what it is, but I love it. They're lined up next to us. They're looking at us as if we've just landed from another planet. And I only got it later when I went off to play in Italy. The Italians play with so much fear. They're so nervous. You know, the pressure was on them in their stadium to win this competition. Mm. And Bruce is doing double what you see on that screen. And they must think he is properly mad. And we're all singing and banging on the walls because that became our theme song, that. And we went out and just played with a freedom that they couldn't, because they had some super players. What did they have? 3 World Cup winners, a couple of Brazilians. Proper team, but I think on the night we deserved to beat them. And the penalty that you showed, I don't know how that went.
I was going to ask, are you looking, going, yeah, exactly where
I'm going to ask, ask away.
No, you asked. So you're accepting that that wasn't exactly where you wanted
no,
to place it?
No, it was, but let me tell you this. When I took a penalty, I took them occasionally when Neely wouldn't take them, I took them occasionally for Scotland. I'd always, because you get more sort of power on it, sort of shape, if I'm kicking it there, I'd shape to do that, and then you whip it and go to the goalkeeper's right. Mm. So I've placed the ball on the spot, that's what I'm going to do. I've placed it on the spot, I've looked at them, I've turned away and I've thought, I'll go the other way. And looking at it, and every time I'm still thinking, that's going over the bar when I see it. And I mean, and if anyone's, I'm sure most of the people in this room have kicked a football. Without sounding big-headed, that is the hardest technique to get right, because you're kicking it with, you know, the smallest part of your foot.
It looks like the greatest penalty kick ever taken. Well, you should just go with that.
Can you edit this part of it? Can you make? Don't put that bit out. Just say I meant it, and it was always there.
Just before we leave Joe Fagan, because you were talking there, and you obviously had a very close relationship with him, and describing the way he was, and you spoke about the Italian sides having the fear.
I'll try and tell this story, and I'll be quick without trying to get too emotional, because I do get emotional about it. We were playing Southampton. My mum was dying. We stopped at Oxford long before mobile phones. I'm in the hotel. We have our lunch. The boys get back on the bus. I make the call to my brother, who tells me, you know, she won't survive. And then I get back on the bus, and he gives me a volley. You know, you've kept us all wait. I'm captain, but I deserved it. And then rather than go and sit at the back of the bus where I sat, I just sat in a seat sort of halfway up the bus on my own. And someone must have said he's... And then he came and sat with his arm around me from Oxford all the way to Southampton. Sorry, I said I wouldn't, but you know, he was a special man. Mm.
Do you think he felt the weight of the job before that European Cup final?
No, he was enjoying it because we were winning every week. You know, he had a great team. He had a good bunch of lads. You know, I'm a great believer, and you'd hear me say it. And I'm not shy in saying it. I'll say it every week if necessary. You've got no chance at a football club as a manager unless you've got good senior pros. And he had some great pros. And then, obviously, what broke him was what happened at Heysel. Mm.
You've been very good with your time. You're going to come back in a little while. We're going to talk about this current Liverpool crop and maybe where they compare and what they may do. We're going to let you go for a little while and relax upstairs with the lads. Graham Souness.
Thank you.
Thanks, Graham. I'll give it. You can bring that. Thanks a million. Stay in your seats, guys. Our next guests are coming straight up. We are here tonight with thanks to Virgin Media, who've over 400 UEFA Champions League Europa League and Nations League games live this season. All of these games are available to all Virgin Media TV customers, and you can also download the TV Anywhere app and stream the action whenever and wherever you like. As I said, Graham is going to be back in just a little while. If you want to ask him any questions, use the hashtag OTBTheAlex. We're giving away a couple of prizes, a couple of footballs signed by our guests. You've got a set of JBL 120 wireless earbuds and a pair of tickets to see either the film Zidane or Street Leagues at the Virgin Media Dublin International Film Festival. But our next guests are ready to go. So stay in your seats, because give it up for Damien Delaney and Brian Kerr. How are you?
Beer.
Not my beer. You can have the end of that beer.
Not my beer. No, thanks. Yeah, good.
So the last time we did a roadshow with Virgin Media Sport was, I think, back in November. We were up in Dundalk, Damien. Yeah. We had a great night. We had Niall Quinn with us. And we gave Niall the floor. And we were talking about Irish football. And we said, Niall, give us your vision. And I really think that's what started the ball rolling. And Niall now essentially runs Irish football. So, Brian Kerr, the floor is yours. What do you want to say about the future of Irish football?
Is Niall behind the scene here?
He's everywhere else.
Winding me up. Yeah, go on.
So what is your future in Irish football?
Jeez, I might get to sit in this seat for a while longer. I've no idea. What are we on? Tomorrow night, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Virgin Media, Champions League, two nights in a row. Graeme Souness, Niall Quinn, me, I don't know who else is on. And Thursday as well, Europa League. I think Dancing Man is back, is he? The Dancing Man.
The Dancing Man, Kilbane, he's going to return.
Yeah, I think. I don't know whether he's on his board or on, but anyway.
Jesus. Don't get started.
He'll bring maybe both. Maybe we're not on. We're doing co-com.
He'll bring you a copy of Hello Magazine, I'm sure, as well.
Jesus, no thanks. Is that for DIY, is it? No.
In all seriousness, though, there's been a lot of speculation about what might happen. Even I was reading in the papers yesterday, everyone's wondering what happens next, and when Stephen Kenny takes over the senior team, what happens with the 21s, whether it's Robbie Keane who goes in, or there was even speculation yesterday maybe Damien Duff might get the job and you might go in as some sort of a godfather advisor role. Is it something you'd be interested in?
In being a godfather?
Not a godfather.
I have.
Godfather.
God love the poor kids that are in their godfather. I've been missing an action for all the things you're supposed to be around for. I have no idea. I have not talked to them about anything like that. And I don't know what way. Look, I'm glad the way it's gone. And I just think the situation Mick is in, he shouldn't have been put into that situation where his successor was picked when he was given the job. Like, well, I've never come across that, and I don't know whether I've come across it in any job, but certainly not in football, where they pick your successor and tell you at the time. It's a mad one. But anyway, look.
Has it not worked out quite well? Stephen Kenny's been in and around the international setup's done well with the 21s.
Well, he'd be hamstrung, Mick, a little bit.
But has it gone well for Mick?
You think that's part of the reason why results haven't been
the way
we would have wanted?
I don't think it's helped Mick, knowing that, you know...
No matter what happens, you're gone.
Yeah, no matter what happens, you're gone. And there's already a mood there that the move is on. I think Stephen is a very, very good choice for the job. I just didn't think it was right, and I don't think it's helped Mick. I don't think it's helped the speculation about the way we're playing, the way we should be playing, and how we should get results in the two games. You need the manager, you know, players need to have faith in the manager. They need to respect him. They also need not to be looking at him going, well, I know you won't be here too long anyway. It's the next bloke I need to impress. It's a really odd one. But anyway, I don't know what's going to happen other than we know that's going to happen. And Keith is here, isn't he? You can ask him. Is he?
There's an empty seat so far, but he'll be here in a while.
He's behind the chair as well. But so, you know, I've no idea what's going on. I mean, Damien's doing good, great work at Celtic. He's emerged and gone up the ranks fairly quickly.
I hadn't thought of that, of how maybe because of Stephen Kenny, and even in terms of style of football.
It's
and
not
everyone
like
wants
you
to
not to think of everything. 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 Go on. Sorry.
But obviously results haven't gone well under Mick, and there's questions about style of play, and we want sort of a revolution in all of Irish football, and we're looking at other countries, and can we not do things better, technically better? And because of the feeling that Stephen Kenny is doing that with the 21s and has done it with Dundalk, that there's a sort of weird limbo with the national team, that supporters are looking at them going, yeah, I hope we qualify because the games are in Dublin, but there's something better down the road.
But you can't help but feel that when the FAI put Mick in charge, they were putting a safe pair of hands in it, because when the financial stuff came out afterwards, they have to qualify for the Euros, or they don't have to, but they really, really need it. And Stephen might have been a little bit of a risk, a change in style, because, you know, when Stephen comes in, you can't expect straight away we're going to play fantastic football and win games of football. You know, it might be a couple of tournaments where we're figuring out sort of style of play and then getting results on top of that as well. And I think that's probably where they were going with it. But
I don't think they were going anywhere with it. I think it was a, let's get Mick now and we have the other one. And it was a smart aleck type thing. We'd give Mick the job, but a lot of people would like to see Stephen having the job. So we'd tell him that he has it next. But I don't think it was a thing about the style of play.
Well, I think what ended up happening is they gave Mick the job, and then John started coming under enormous amounts of pressure, and then John kind of, as a deflection type of thing, just came out and said, Stephen, they came out and said it just to take the heat off him a little bit. But I think because they needed the finances so bad, they didn't want to take any huge risks, and they said, we'll give it to Mick and we'll continue with the style of play, because with the extended tournament there's a fair chance that, you know, Mick's style can get us in, and then once we get in we'll have a great tournament, get some money in the bank, and then we'll start the revolution, as opposed to going with it straight away.
So why hasn't Mick's style worked so far?
I think, constantly having Stephen's shadow hanging over him definitely wouldn't help him. I think Mick's found it very difficult every press conference he goes into. I mean, could you imagine if you're in a job, and any job, and someone's shadow's hanging over you, regardless? I mean, he'd nearly have to get out of the group stage in the Euros to probably keep his job, you know, or certainly put up a great show in there. Otherwise, you're out of a job. That's difficult for anyone.
He hasn't... He hasn't done too badly. I mean, the truth of it is, we usually end up in the playoff, or not getting into the playoff, as in my gig when I was in it, right? But hold
two,
on.
Two wins over Gibraltar, one win over Georgia.
Yeah.
But Brian,
yeah.
Would you not say that the team that finished third and fourth in the group got a playoff spot out of group five?
Yeah, but that's the way.
You know what I mean? You finished third as well.
Slovakia, and that's the way it is in Northern Ireland.
But it's not that you earned the playoff spot.
But that's where our level is at the moment. With the players we have at the moment, that's where our level is. We're all hoping that some of these younger players are going to emerge and are going to improve us. A lot of people think it's going to be dramatic improvement in the forward line, in the attacking area of the pitch. Let's wait and see. You know, just because they change the style, the feeling seems to be, change the style, everything will be all right. It won't necessarily be that. I mean, a lot of people follow Brighton, have been talking that way for a long time this season. And now they're, you know, the results are not going quite so well. They might be kind of going, well, maybe we need to be a little bit more like it was with Chris and make sure we stay in the league. Then it's all lovely with Graham Potter and everything's gorgeous and we'll play lovely football and we have lots of shots on goal. But we might have to go back to the 37-year-old fellow to play centre forward to get us a goal now. So it's.
But I think under the
it's
current,
not as simple.
You're right, it's not. But under the current system, it has a ceiling to it. You can only go so far with it, and football's moving on. If you take a step back and own up the system, all of a sudden now you're on the path, and the possibilities are endless. But at the minute, I think we've definitely hit that buffer, and we can't go past it. So we might need to take two steps backwards, set up a new system, and then let those players develop in it, and you never know where we can go then, but it's the possibility people will follow, you know.
Do you think with everything that's happened off the field that there is a sense of change within Irish football, and what Damien's talking about resetting, that even if straight away when Stephen Kenny comes in, hopefully in August after the European Championship, and he has a Nations League campaign, these five or six matches, and even if results aren't right, that there will be more patience if the quality of football is a bit better? Or do you think we'll all go back to results?
There's a lot of questions in there. Are we at a time of change? Sinn Féin going to take over football as well? are we going to be patient if it's not running smoothly for Stephen at the start?
That's going to be the crux of it.
Yeah, we're at a time of change. I mean, the FAI has changed, new people in charge. certainly much more out there. Niall is busy. Niall is out front to letting people know a bit what's going on. I think it's been good change. As I said earlier, I don't think the group who are there now are worried too much about how many tickets they're going to have for the matches themselves, how far up the plane they're going to be sitting, where they're going to be forced in for the grub before the players and the staff, and how good the hotel is going to be. I don't have any sense of that from these people. I think that they're the original six that emerged to try and save the day up until December, up until Christmas. I think we're very genuine football people who were in the lower echelons of the game and emerged into the position of being on the board and then having to wait around for the independent directors. Now we've got three of them still waiting on one. Gary Owens is in as the CEO. Niall has come in, and a fair play to him for giving it a blast, giving it a go, and having the courage to go and take on a job like that. But I think there's a sense around that there's something happening, and that there's people there who care a bit about it and want to do it, not for themselves, but for them. And there's also a frustration with them that it should have been so much better if we'd had people with a bit of savvy and business acumen at the top of the game. That the sort of deals that we've been doing were Mickey Mouse in a commercial sense for so long, in comparison to the love of the game, the participation levels of the game, the number of people that are passionate about it, and in comparison to other sports. And the GAA do a great job, and rugby do a great job, but numbers playing the game in terms of particularly rugby. But on the commercial end, they seem to be miles out. Anyway, I think leaving that aside, I think they're doing well. They made a good start. We all could do what was winning a match with Slovakia and beating Northern Ireland, but I think they're prepared for that not happening. I think the people in charge now.
It's not the be all and end all that it
was. No, I think they've been realistic enough to say, look, we're on the bottom here and we're struggling and we have no guarantee we're going to win both of those matches, which is what we need to do. And we can't depend on that. We've got to walk away on the basis that that may not happen and we won't be involved in the Euros here, and get on with it and look to the future and look at what's going on with the underage teams and continue development and continue the league. I mean, there's been a lot about the league, and Damien played out his last days in the league, and he's good ideas about it and good passion about it. And I thought about him when he came back to play in the league with Cork. I thought about him and I saw him playing, and I was thinking, the last time I saw him playing was, I think, against Liverpool in Selhurst Park, and it didn't go great, right? I think there was a red.
I gave a penalty in injury time.
I knew it didn't go great. I didn't want to say that, but what I saw was a fella playing, you know, in a, like Selhurst Park. I'm sure many of you have been in the stadium. It's one of my favourite grounds to go to because of the passion. It's like a magnified League of Ireland ground in many ways. It's old and it's tight and there's not a lot of space. There's wooden steps in the stand.
There's poles blocking your view.
And I'm letting on, I know who scored. And it's, you've been with me and you're spoofing because it's at that end and there's about six poles in your way. When yous were scoring goals. But you can't, at this end we were all right. But it's great. It's a passionate place. Yeah. And then I see that, and the intensity of the game and the passion and also his part in the play, his discipline and in the partnership with Scott Dan, a lot of Scott Dan, and how well they handled fast, quick fella. And then he's back in the League of Ireland and he's playing the range of grounds. I probably saw you down in Cork a bit. I saw you in Waterford then as well. And it's different. And he's trying to play up at that level. And then he's playing the Daily Mail.
I think I definitely, when he came back, I was under no illusion. It was always on the bucket list of mine. I'm a massive fan of the League of Ireland. I came out of the League of Ireland. I always followed it. And I always wanted to go back in. But I suppose deep down, I knew that, you know, if my legs were gone,
right.
going, you know, there's only a little bit
it
left,
went
like,
when
you know.
When we first were together, he played in it. Playing the match, you want to talk about the match?
Yeah.
Go on.
It was a home-based player thing, was it, Brian?
It was a home, an international match, but we only used home-based players.
Played against
Imagine
the
that as an image. Imagine that as a dream for the future. We only used home-based players. Newry against Northern Ireland.
Yeah. But, I mean, that was great for me because I never went to the UK as a young fella, and you kind of think, you know, to get international recognition at 8 years of age when you're playing like still in Ireland was absolutely brilliant. But I remember Brian looking after us there and with the hotels and, you know, all hands on, and made a really good experience. And it was fantastic kind of shot in the arm for me to keep going, that there was hope there, that, you know, I wasn't, the boat hadn't sailed or whatever, you know. So it was really good, and I always be appreciative of Brian for that.
How did he play?
The point of it was we used the home-based players who hadn't gone away, and out of that, several of them went away, including yourself and Joe Gamble, because they played so well at that level. But, you know, it was the start of, and you had to scrap in various leagues.
But those types of like little trips were brilliant. Like, yeah, because for me, you're kind of going, oh, I've missed the boat, and all of a sudden, no, hang on a minute. Then you play against a team from the north, and things start happening. It keeps you interested, keeps you alive, keeps you believing that you can actually get there. And for that, I'd always be grateful.
And did you enjoy being back? Because you're probably one of very few players who, I think, your last game in England was a Premier League match, and your next game, even though there was a bit of a gap, was a League of Ireland game.
Yeah.
Like, did you enjoy it, even though you felt your legs were gone?
I did. I did. I totally enjoyed it. It was fantastic for me to be living at home, you know, having pretty much at my mum's house, you know, going to a ground and travelling on the buses up and down, you know, back from Ballybofey, coming through, like, Oman, all these places, you know.
Doesn't sound great.
It wasn't, but it was. I loved it because it was everything for me. Right. It was just always what I wanted, and I get to play in nice tight grounds where the grass was a little bit long, and you're actually some pitches are a bit bobbly, and you know, getting abuse off the crowd and everything. But I loved it. I absolutely loved it, and I don't regret a minute of that. I really don't, and I was so happy that I could get to do it. But the only alternative was going back into the championship in 46 games a season, and I knew I couldn't do that. Like, I definitely couldn't. So when I spoke to John Caulfield, I said, John, what can you give me? And he just threw a figure out and says, I'll take it. I mean, you know what I mean? I just didn't care. I just wanted to come back and play, and I didn't want to take a salary and then, you know, have an expectation of me or anything like that. So I just said, look, just I'll take it, whatever you want. I came back, and I loved it.
Has anyone ever spoken to you since you came back about your thoughts on the league and where you think it can be improved?
Funny enough, actually, I spoke to Niall after the gig in Dundalk.
You're the brains of the operation.
Listen. I was getting into my car on a dark Monday night in Dundalk, and I heard, I was like, here, come off to me. And
Jesus.
Quinny just like hollered me for like half an hour in the car park, and I was like, look, I'm going, can I go now, please? But he was asking me about, you know, what, you know, because he was involved in the projects with Brian and stuff like that. And, but you know what Niall is like once he gets going. But
you tell him?
Oh, look, I just gave him my opinion on the League of Ireland. I said it to Brian earlier tonight that, like, you know, everyone's always talking about the League of Ireland, you know, we need to get it better to stop kids going over. I think straight away, you're never going to stop kids going over to the UK. They're always going to go. The market we're missing out on is the kids coming back at 19, 20 and 21, because these fellas, like, have been through the mill in the UK. Their confidence is on the ground. You know, they're falling out of love of football, and they're just on the fence. Do I give up and get on with my life, or do I go back and play football? And it's almost like they come back to Ireland, and it's one last shot. And then they come back from the standard they came from, and they come into the League of Ireland, and they find it difficult because they're still only 19, Brian made that point, because they're not quite men yet. They haven't played men's football, and they go into the League of Ireland, they find it difficult, and most of them, it's just rubber stamping, football isn't for me and getting out of my life. And I think if the league can be spruced up, a reserve team league come back in, that the market of the young fellas come back from the UK, if we can give them something to fall in love with again, and there'd be no better man to have involved in something like that, to give these guys something. I love football, and this is why I started playing in the first bit, and that's what the League of Ireland needs to be.
Yeah, I know you're big on a reserve league as well, Brian, and I've spoken about it previously, that it's something that needs to be brought in. Just before we wrap up, you're obviously a sensation as a pundit these days, a social media viral sensation from time to time as well, with Virgin Media Sport, with your little celebrations. You've seen this, right?
Well, someone said to me, you went viral there the other night, and I said, does that mean I'm going to die? So that's That's how far up the scale I am on that whole so trending thing as well. You're trending on Twitter. I go, geez, I'm in trouble again. So, you know. So, yeah, I was exposed over the sports. But it wasn't even that. It was sports. It was the thrill of the match, the madness of the match. And we had it 2 nights in a row. It was just incredible, the AX sports thing. It was just, I mean, it looked like the match was petering out in Europe. So it was a great night, and we were caught.
We obviously love having you on Off the Ball on the games on Sundays as well, and you've thrown yourself into the punditry. It's a while since you've coached a team. Does any part of you miss being on the sideline in the tracksuit? Are you past that?
I've had the odd team in the 5-a-side here and there, and the 7-a-side, and I'd be whinging and moaning and giving out. So, yeah, they will miss it. I really enjoy what I do. The only thing that has, I worked in the lab, you know. People that wouldn't know too much, I worked in a chemistry lab for 27 years. I can see people say he's bleeding, making this up. But I haven't. I did. I worked in UCD for 27. So, you know, every day was different. Every day there was something kind of could happen, and you try not to explode too much. And, you know, make the windows blow out or whatever in the lab, because I ran off and left something that I should have been doing to take a phone call about Pats, you know. But anyway, I did all that, and then I ran teams, and now I'm doing the media, and everything's been very good. I have to say, he probably agree about playing. And for me, it was about managing, because I wasn't a particularly good player. Although there were men fell outside on the way in, and he said he remembered seeing me scoring 2 goals in the 7-a-side up in Finglas. So remember, tell them all.
So, are you sure?
Yeah, that's what I said. Are you sure? But anyway, I wasn't. But the managing teams and been involved with a team that goes well, and the match goes for you, and you think you've had a little part of it. There's nothing beats that. There's nothing beats it, I would say, bar for a player, if you're a good player and you score a hat-trick or you know, get a winning goal in the cup final or that. I never had that joy, but I had the joy of being with teams. But, you know, there you go. I haven't had it for a good while.
We don't want to lose you from the radio and the telly anyway, so I think everyone here...
You better pay me more.
Talk to the boss.
Are you messing?
We are here tonight with thanks to Virgin Media Sport, who have over 400... Turn off their mics quick. Who have over 400 UEFA Champions League, Europa League and Nations League games live this season. All of these games, over the next 3 nights in particular, are available to all Virgin Media TV customers, who can also download the TV Anywhere app and stream the action whenever and wherever they like. Graeme Souness is going to be back on stage. We'll have Keith Andrews as well. If you have any questions for them in the second part of the show, just use the hashtag OTBTheAlex. We've got some brilliant prizes to give away for the best questions. But we're going to take a very short break. Give it up, though, for Brian Kerr and Damien Delaney.